Good evening to each one again. And welcome. God's blessing and grace to each of you. You want the most wonderful thing is you can forget everything I've said. You can forget even who I am. But you know what? One thing I'd like to just let with you, a last thing, kind of aside from the sermon yet included, is it's the most wonderful privilege I've ever had in my life is simply to be a Christian. There's nothing else to compare. That God can take someone like me. You know, we get so fixated on position, on what happened and what we do and all that, but that's all really nothing in the light of eternity. As I think of meetings like this or other things, it's a fascinating time in that there's a lot of people involved. I probably even haven't met all of you personally yet. At the same time, I don't know, I guess those that do similar things kind of know how I feel in that. I feel like I'm kind of glad it's the last one. I'm kind of wore out. I feel like I'm given a lot. I don't say that in a proud way or anything at all. It's just, yeah. My wife asked me if I'm glad we're going home, and I am. But I'm also sad in a way, because there's so much. God's work is so precious, and to see it, this maybe sounds odd, and it's not that I feel I need to personally be involved in one hand, but I'm excited about God's work, whether it's here or at home. And just to let that work continue. But at the same time, there's many, actually probably all of you, I know all of you, gave of yourself as well. You're here, that's part of it. Hopefully your prayers, which I still need. Time. Some of you opened your hearts, different things, and may God bless you for that, and thank you. Because that also, as you shared with me, whether it's just simply your time, whether it's your prayers, has been a great blessing. Especially whether it's the school children, whether it's the other ones, please pray for my family and I, and our church. The devil hates to see God's work go forward, and he does all he can to thwart it. And I'm as human as anybody here tonight, you know? And I can face as strong a temptation as anyone, so please pray for me. And I'm not superstitious or anything. I used to think, I listened to preachers say about face it worse. I thought that was kind of superstitious. Let me tell you, it's not necessarily. I'm not necessarily expecting on the one hand. On the other hand, yes, it is. It has its challenges and things, and so pray for us. I'd like to speak of a life displaying God's work. A life displaying God's work tonight. I shared at least some of this at our Bible school in 2015, so if you were there, I don't really make an apology, because as I looked at this subject again, I needed it so much. And I'd like for this, it's an intensely personal message on the one hand, and I hope my emotional thing don't bother you, because I'm sure I will be. I know I'll mention some people. At the same time, I want it to be personal. You know, whether it's something, I'll just share briefly some of the areas that I'm struggling with this in. I have a small business, and I'm needing more good, honest help. And that's something I've faced before, but yet still, just to allow God to work in that. There's some direction in different things that we've been working with as a couple and some of the people God has called us to work with, where He wants us to go, how much He wants us to organize this thing, some of that. And then there's also the thing of a church. Our church is far from perfect, even though I have brothers and sisters that dearly love the Lord. And we've had one of our deacons move off, the other one is thinking about it, and that puts the church through a rough time. And so that's some of the things we're facing, and so I am preaching this message to myself tonight. Okay. A life displaying God's work. You don't need to raise your hand or anything like that, but how many of you have ever felt like the wrong person at the wrong place in the wrong time? I have. In fact, this is one of the places I sometimes feel like that. How many of you have ever thought, I could be a much better person and achieve so much more in my life if the people around me would be more conducive to what I should be achieving? How many of you have ever thought or wondered, I could make some headway in my life and be much more of a blessing to God's kingdom if only my circumstances were more ideal? Have you ever felt that, you know, if my parents would have been different, if I would have had good, caring parents, be different, more caring, more understanding of me? You know, if my family were one of these close-knit families that would help rather than hinder me, you know, I could really be somebody for God. I like what Otto Koning once said. In speaking of his experience there in Papua New Guinea, I think it was, he said, I could have been a very good missionary if it would not have been for the people I was trying to work with. You know, right. The people around me I need to associate with. The circumstances I have been placed in just do not allow me to be the person I could be. Otherwise, you know, they are the limiting factor in my walk, my life, and my work. Or, have you ever felt that way? That they are? Now, as I go into this next stage, I want to be clear, I am not saying God is to blame for the wrong choices and decisions that others make that bring negative effects into our lives. That's another subject, but I do want to be clear on that. At the same time, God being God, right? He could overrule and keep anything bad from happening, could he not? So why? Why does God allow us to go through things that have so much potential to derail our lives, to destroy our spiritual life? Why does he do it? Okay, if you remember, I told you I'd really like for you to remember something this morning. I'm almost taking that same phrase, but changing it just a little bit, and I'd still like for you to remember it. Wherever there is most potential for ruin, there also is the greatest potential for growth and maturing. Wherever there is most potential for ruin, there also is the greatest potential for growth and maturing. You know, honestly, we in our culture know very little of bearing with unpleasantness. If we don't like a certain food, we don't eat it, right? If our job doesn't suit us, we find another one. If we have an unpleasant boss, we fire him. If we don't like our surroundings, we change them. Therefore, as a Christian, when God brings circumstances into our lives that are less than pleasant to help us grow, we face the temptation of checking all the escape routes. There's a door. I can run. I leave. You know, I would be a super employee if it was not for my employer. I'd be a wonderful neighbor if my neighbor wasn't the way he or she was. You know, I'd be a better and way more patient dad if only my child was more reasonable and or obedient. And sometimes for me, it's more, wouldn't talk so much. You know, I'd be an awesome son or daughter if dad was more understanding or mom was not like she is. I would have a good relationship with my church leaders if only they would be different, more understanding of me, not so set in their ways and thoughts. You know, I'd support and be a builder in the church. If only my brothers and sisters were more like Christ and more what they ought to be first, then I could get around to it. You know, I'd be a real good, strong Christian if only my fleshly desires weren't so strong, if my circumstances weren't so insurmountable. Can anyone tell me what Romans 8, verse 28 says? Thank you. And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are called according to His purpose. Open your Bibles to John chapter 9. John chapter 9. I actually won't be reading this, but you make sure I'm right. And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are called according to His purpose. Is that really true in 2017? There's a qualifying phrase here I should probably point out first. A qualifying phrase means He's not saying this is true in every situation to everybody, okay? That qualifying phrase is to them that love God. You have to be in that group. If you're not in this group, this message does not pertain to you, quite frankly. To them that love God. It qualifies to who this is true. But now, since I clarified that, is it true? Do you believe it? Not in saying, oh yeah, I mean, I'm sure every Christian, every probably adult here almost, would, if I would come just up to you and say, do you believe Romans 8 verse 28? You would say, oh yeah. But do you really believe it? Not in saying it, but deep down, inside, where you decide how to respond to the circumstances you face in life, the circumstances you are facing, do you believe it? Do you really believe that God has put you in the best place, with the best people, at the best time, in the best position, to make what best serves His kingdom and your own spiritual well-being? Notice I said spiritual. We get this thing so backwards. We think first physical, then mental and emotional generally, and then spiritual. God turns it around. He's much more concerned where you're at spiritually tonight than He is that you have a cozy bed to sleep in, even though that's not wrong, or that you have a lot of friends, even though that's great. Do you really believe that God has put you in the best place, with the best people, at the best time, in the best position, to help make you what best serves His kingdom and your own spiritual well-being? Okay, so if this is true, how do you explain some stories I want to share with you? I'd like to tell you about a little girl named Kenley. Very similar to my girl's names, but it was not my daughter. She was about 5 at the time this happened. She was found to have cancerous tumors in her kidneys. Why? Why would God let that happen to an innocent child? I'll take that one up later. Or how about this one? I have a cousin. She would have been about 8 years older than I am. A few years back, she was diagnosed with cancer. She and her husband, at the time, had 5 children from the age of 8 years old to a little bit over a year old. She passed away a little over 2 years ago. Why? They were conscientious people, Christians, seeking to serve God. She was so needed. Can you think of a person that's more needed than a mother with 5 children, 8 and under? Couldn't God have healed her? Or how about this? Way different tack, but still. How about a young man I know well, born into a home where he was not really wanted, having a dad that had a serious anger problem? You know, his family could put on a good face in public at church and so on, but at home they struggled tremendously. He didn't have a person he felt close to that he could open up to. And his life just started this downward spiral. Why? How about a family that doesn't live too far from us? In fact, I think they may have some relatives, or at least people that know them here. I think it's, what is it, a year and a half, maybe a little more than that. They had a son. Father and son were spending some time, and other boys were spending some time together. And there's an accident. The boy flips off the truck, and the truck runs over him, and he's killed. Very nice family. I appreciate them a lot. Why would God allow this pain to a family who's doing their best to serve Him? Why? Could He not have prevented that accident? I think we know the answers, but do you know why? Okay, the next one. In a large city, large important city, was a very small and unimportant house where a very poor man, I say a poor man and his wife, lived. One day this poor man and his wife received a gift. They received a gift. It was the gift of a son, a baby boy. They didn't have this gift very long until they noticed there was something wrong. They did everything they could for him in their circumstances, but there wasn't really much they could do. He was born blind. You should have your Bibles open to this story. Now we need to understand a little bit of this culture of this large city to understand what all was actually happening here. The people in this country, and especially maybe even in this city, believed that all suffering, get this, all suffering was the result or the punishment for sin. So when you had a child that was born blind, somewhere, somehow, somebody involved had sinned in their life. They also taught that life began at conception, which was correct, but then they branched off and actually said that a child could commit sin before he was born. Now, I don't quite follow their theology on that one, so I'm not even going to take that one any further, but that's what they taught. Now, guess what? This teaching was very convenient for the healthy and the fit people, right? Because if anyone questioned your righteousness and or rightness, you could say, I'm healthy, I'm good, I've got two eyes that work, so therefore I'm a good person. Wow. You know, I wasn't born blind like you were, therefore I'm a good person, my parents were good people, and I have Moses for my father, my lineage. Well, going back to this, years went by. That baby that was born blind grew up to be what blind babies are, a blind man in this case. And all the while his parents lived under a cloud, the cloud of having sinned. One day in this large city, there was a new subject of conversation or gossip. They could forget about the blind man and what supposed sin had happened there. There was some new fellow in town. And this fellow was teaching things that, I don't know, it kind of didn't fit with the status quo. Not only was he teaching people, he was actually healing people. Okay, now think about this for a second here. If all suffering and sickness was the result of sin, okay, what business did this man have in taking away punishment that sinners had brought on themselves? Not only did he heal sinners, people that were guilty in this culture's eyes, he even did it on the Sabbath day, which was a big no-no. Okay, so this is what's happening in this town now. So one day we have this blind man going about his business, probably begging it would seem in that culture. This new teacher and his disciples come by. Now this man's disciples had grown up in this culture. They thought like this culture. In fact, they were part of this culture. This culture of prejudging. And they saw this blind man. And they saw an excellent opportunity to ask a theological question. In their narrow-mindedness, they saw two possible reasons for this man's blindness. Sin in either his parents or himself. He was born blind, so it had been sin that occurred before he was born. So they asked the person they follow, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Now put yourself in this blind man's body for a bit. Make yourself him. Use your imagination there. Can you imagine being born blind, living in a culture where you're always suspect of sin, though you're not even sure what sin to own up to? And you hear questions like this time after time. Now here's a new fellow, and he's teaching things that kind of encourage you, and then here they come, and right here, his disciples, right in front of you, say, Master, look at this guy, he's blind. Now why is he blind? Is he a bad guy or his parents bad? Oh, the blind man, I don't know, in my imagination, he's like, oh no, just, do I have to listen to this again? And maybe he tries to tune it out. But can you imagine how his heart rate might have increased just a bit when in spite of it, he heard the teacher say, neither this man has sinned, nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him. Wow. So now what did he just say? He's actually saying I didn't sin. He's actually saying mom and dad aren't bad people. That I'm not blind because of that. But then he's saying that I'm blind so that the works of God could be made manifest in me. Well, wow. What hope? Yet, wait. You mean this came upon me. I'm blind all these years just so that God could show His work in me? Are you telling me I spent 20, 30 years in blindness for no other purpose than so that I could be some kind of illustration? You know, if God, just think of His next thought, if God wants to do some work, I sure wish He would get on with it. My whole life up till now, in my eyes, wasted for what? But wait, these thoughts kind of get interrupted. What's happening now? The teacher walks up, and I hear somebody spit on the ground. And I can hear him bend over and doing something on the ground. What in the world is he up to now? I can't see. Then I feel someone reaching towards my face. Will he touch my eyes and heal them? I've heard he can do that. Will he do it for me? Whatever. He's actually smearing mud over my face, my eyes. You know, of all the things that have happened to me in all my life, and it's been a terrible life, a rough life, I've never suffered somebody actually spitting on the ground, making mud, and smearing it on my face. At the same time, I just cannot get rid of one thing he said. That the works of God should be made manifest in him. What does that mean? So I keep standing still before him. After he smeared my face, he says, "Go. Go. And wash in the pool of Siloam." I'm confused. But you know what? I do need to be washed, so let's go. That is at least a good idea. And maybe, just maybe, God does have a plan for me. Even if I can't see it. Even if I can't comprehend it. So I go. I go and wash. And you know, as that mud is just wiped away from my eyes, of all the wonderful things, light floods my eyes for the first time. I was born blind. I lived as a blind man 30 years. I had to bear the indignities, the questions of who sinned. I had to have mud of dirt and spit smeared on my face. All this, so that God could show His work in me. You know, as I now joyfully went my way, the past sufferings forgotten in the newfound joy of sight. A sensation spreads through the people around me. And they say, "Who is this man?" Well, he looks like the fellow that was born blind that was hanging around here. Well, he can't be though. He evidently can see. Well, the next thing I know, the people around me come and ask, "Who are you? Are you really the fellow that was born blind?" Well, for once, there's one thing I do know. And he says, "I am he." That's me. Yeah, I was blind. But I can see. Guess what? I can see. Well then, how do you see? Well, I tell them. They don't believe me. It's a long story. But I go from being a despised and pitied blind man to being a rejected and condemned seeing man. You know, I'm desperately confused by this point. What really is God's plan? What is it the man who healed me said? That the works of God should be made manifest in him. How could this be God's work? I go my way confused. What a day. I'm happy I can see. But I'm bewildered and pained that others seem angry that I'm healed. I don't know what to do or where to turn. So I trudged along the road. Then I meet someone. The voice is sort of familiar, but I haven't seen this face yet. The face is different from any face I've seen yet today. with my newfound sight. There's peace on this face. There's love on this face. There's acceptance in this face. And this man asked a question in a voice I know I've heard before. Do you believe on the Son of God? I respond, who is He, Lord? Who is He, Master, that I might believe on Him? The man responds, you've seen Him, and it's He who's talking to you. I cry out, Lord, I believe, and I fall down and worship Him, the God who sent me into the world blind, so He could be shown in me. Lord, it still doesn't make sense to me, but I believe. I allow You to be bigger than what I am. I accept Your ways, ways that are higher than my ways, and Your thoughts, thoughts that are far beyond anything I can comprehend or understand. I'm going to try to make this practical. And if any of these hits on something that you've experienced, it's not because I changed it to match you. I left this exactly the way I came with it to Oregon. But some practical areas. Lord, I don't understand why You would allow me to be born into a home where I was not wanted. It doesn't make sense. Dear Lord, I cannot comprehend why You left me as a young child be under evil influences and sinful situations that I had nothing to do with, no choice to make in. Lord, how could it be Your plan that my innocence as a child was ruined by another's selfishness and now I have to live the rest of my life with scars? Lord, I'm bewildered. Why did You put me in a home where Dad and Mom don't get along? And my life is a living nightmare. You know, Lord, I have such a struggle in my life because Dad, Mom, both do not seek after You. Yet somehow I'm trying to be a Christian and there's nobody to really help me to walk with me. Dear Lord, I don't see how having a parent, a spouse, I care for so much, go through suffering, through cancer or other disease, how can that bring glory to You? Lord, I'm broken with sorrow. How could You let someone die that I needed and cherished so much? Dear Lord, I cannot comprehend why the relationship that I had so many hopes built on and so many dreams for could end in such a ruin. Oh God, I'm confused. Why do some of my friends have homes of their own, yet I have to go on in singlehood lonely year after lonely year? Lord, I'm discouraged with the health issues I face. Why do I have to be the one that struggles with poor health while others go around so free? Lord, why can't I be a success in business and in life? My friends, everything goes so well for them, yet anything I do just crumbles to nothing. Oh God, how can You call me to fill a place in a church and in sharing with others when I have so little talent and I'm so extremely unqualified? Oh Father, I can't understand. Why do You allow those who claim to be Your people and even those I'm supposed to look up to as spiritual leaders to bite and devour each other? Oh God, I can't seem to grasp how and why the people, the church I love so much, how can they splinter and fragment around me? Dear friends, could it just be that the potter is wiser than the clay? Is God allowed to have a plan I cannot comprehend? You know, I cannot see why. And I may not comprehend the plan. There's one thing I can do. I can say, Lord, I believe. I can fall down and I can worship. Not because I see, but because I serve a God who gives sight. Not because I comprehend, but because your ways are higher than my ways, and your thoughts are higher than my thoughts. Not because it's my plan, but because it is your will. Not because it's easy, but because your only Son showed me how to trust. Not because it makes sense to me, but because my will is lost in your will and in your way. You have sent me to wash so that others might see you and your work shown in me and through me in what is your perfect plan for me. Can I say, as I kneel at any Gethsemane that is sent my way, not my will, Father, but thine be done through me and with me. Even when I don't understand, you are with me through the valley. I claim your rod and your staff as my comfort. When life seems barren, I trust you to lead me to green pastures and beside still waters, as I yield my all, my everything to you and to your control. You and you alone, O Daddy, can restore my soul when I've fallen and keep me in the paths of righteousness when my steps falter. My cup runs over with goodness. Not because of the circumstances I face, but because you are with me and you guide me every step of the way. True goodness and your mercy will follow me all the days of my life as I dwell through faith in your house forever. Let's go back to Kenley. Is Kenley, the 5-year-old girl with tumors, cancerous tumors, went through surgery and treatments. Her caring parents and grandparents stood helplessly by, unable to help, unable to suffer for her. As they watched and as they waited and as they prayed, a verse came to their minds and they shared that verse with me. That the works of God should be made manifest in him, in her. That the works of God might be shown in me in the things I face. Are the works of God manifest in me? Does my life in the things that do not make sense to me show the work of God? Do I really believe that God has put me in the best place, with the best people, at the best time, in the best position, with the best circumstances to make me what best serves His kingdom and my own spiritual well-being? Remember, wherever there is most potential for ruin, there also is the greatest potential for growth and maturing. Dear friends, tonight, may God show Himself in me, through me and with me. Will I allow that work or will I rebel? Does my life show the works of God? Let's have you open your life songs to song number 200. Song number 200. Have thine own way, Lord. Have thine own way. Thou art the potter. I'm but the clay. Mold me and make me after thy will, while I am waiting, yielded and still. Have thine own way, Lord. Have thine own way. Search me and try me, Master, today. Whiter than snow, Lord, wash me just now, as in thy presence, humbly I bow. Have thine own way, Lord, have thine own way. Wounded and weary, help me, I pray. Power, all power, surely is thine. Touch me and heal me, Savior divine. Have thine own way, Lord, have thine own way. Hold o'er my being absolute sway. Fill with thy Spirit, till all shall see Christ only always living in me. I'd like to sing this song, and like it says, slowly. Consider the words. Make them personal. And I actually am going to give an invitation, but it's going to be a bit of a different invitation. I'm going to stay standing because I want this song to be real to me. There's some things in my life that I want God to have His way with me. I want Him to be that potter and just help me accept being the clay. And if any of you want to stand with me as the Spirit touches something in your life, it's not that you're, by standing, that you're, we're meeting or anything with you. I just, if God touches your heart, your life, don't be scared to stand, and then we'll just have prayer together. For all of us who have that need in our lives. Matt, could you start the song for me, please?
Thine own way, Lord. Thine own way, thou art the potter, I am the clay. Mold me and make me after thy will, while I am waiting, yielded and still.